Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
And get some work done outside today because of a couple of things. We've got having a baby shower for our next grandchild at the house on Saturday. And then I've got a, I've got carpal tunnel surgery tomorrow. I mean, we sort of, yeah, whatever. Anyway, my arm and wrist and hand have been bothering me for quite a while. At any time, I'd either sit at the computer for a while, but if I was doing any kind of work in the yard, I mean, my hand would get numb and whatever. They said, yeah, it turns out it's severe carpal tunnel. So going to be done tomorrow morning. So I needed to get the work done in the yard today, but a great day to be outside. It is just absolutely beautiful. Hope everybody is enjoying it if you get the opportunity to be outside. We are here with The Drive. Dan is not feeling well today. He said he will be fine tomorrow. I doubt that I'll be on tomorrow after the surgery. I might be able to talk, but there's no telling what I would say. So they probably best for me not to be on. So Dan's not in, but it's Wednesday, and that means here in hour number one, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover is alongside in the studio. JC, how's it going?
Going good. Yeah, I just looked at the weather, the temps. Supposed to be about 85 here tomorrow.
It's unbelievable.
I'll be in Alabaster tomorrow night for Thompson Grayson. Said 88, but like 67 for a low. So you're talking about, you know, halftime upper 70s, mid 70s for a high school game in August.
That is phenomenal.
Incredible.
It is.
Yeah, I mean,
low. It was a little warmer last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a little bit warmer. It'll be low. Projecting right now low 90s for the high for next Saturday. That's normal.
That's about all you could ask for.
Yeah, absolutely. And so,
how hot was it last week?
We had a Friday night game in Atlanta.
Yeah,
it wasn't terrible, but we had a 2-hour storm and rain delay at halftime. So we waited out for a little while until we could see, and we're like, we're not going to stay here till 1 a.m. We crossed the Alabama line as the game was finishing. So we're like, yeah, we made the right decision.
Yeah,
we came
home.
So, but it was, hey, we got to see a half of good football to start with, and then some pretty good ones this week with Thompson and Grayson Thursday night, and then Opelika, Benjamin Russell Friday night is kind of the plan right now. So.
Oh, that ought to be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and as we said, yeah, the weather's great for it. Get out and support the area football. There is some really good football here in the local area. So, football season is here. High school football all over, everywhere this weekend, and you've got the season opener. Although I doubt that we know many folks that are going to be attending. Well, we know one, Barrett Salee, who is on with us. On Fridays, said he'd try to check in.
Yeah.
It will be about 11:30 Dublin time when we normally have Barrett on. And he said, oh, he'll probably be out and about somewhere.
Yeah.
So we may hear from him before that Florida State.
Yeah, I guess that would put kickoff for that game about 6 o'clock at night, somewhere around in there for that Florida State-Georgia Tech game. It's 11 a.m.
Yeah,
Central
it's
time.
seven hours difference.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to. I think it's going to be a fun football game.
I do too.
I really do. I think
a lot of questions. I mean,
I think Georgia Tech's interesting. I really like Haynes King. I'm not sold on DJ Uiagalelei. I just don't know that I believe in him.
He can. Well, I mean, at times he can be really, really good.
Correct. He's really. Can Georgia Tech physically up front be good enough? I know one thing. Brent Key's going to have a good offensive line, and so I think they'll be able to run the football. I think it's an interesting football game. So I think there's three or four games on Saturday, Montana State, New Mexico, a couple other games, and then kind of get rolling with college football. But looking forward to that first one other than just kind of getting to it now on Saturday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And speaking, you're talking about Georgia Tech and the offensive line. Well, a week ago, last Friday, Hugh Freeze said – his concern, the main concern there on the offense, man, who would have thought this? I mean, now the offensive line, there have been some questions about the offensive line. But, Jason, I have the feeling that coming into fall camp, a lot of people felt like, oh, the offensive line is pretty well set. I did. I thought it was pretty well set. But now, from Friday through Tiger Talk on Monday night, Hugh Freeze has said the wide receivers are the group that he feels the best about on offense, and the offensive line is the biggest concern. And Friday he said, he sort of phrased it by, we need to find out where the best place for Dylan Wade is. And that had some, you know, that had people wondering, was he talking about guard? No, it's actually tackle, and they need to find, I mean, and it's no question, you need to have a good left tackle in a good offense.
Yeah, no. I've had concern about Percy Lewis really since the spring. He's a big guy, fairly good feet, but I've had concerns. And I think Auburn was like, hey, get through the summer conditioning and mm-hmm. all these things and then come back and see what it looks like. And then I think after the first scrimmage, they're like, we need to look at something else. And I think you need to look at it and from a standpoint of find a way to get your best five guys on the field. That's the thing you have to do. You can't just go, well, we're just going to play this guy because he's built like a tackle. Well, how about let's play the best five players you have. If that's Dylan Wade at tackle, because we know Tate Johnson's a guy they believe in. Braden Joyner now is a guy they believe in. Jaden Muskrat is coming back from that tightrope surgery that he had right after the spring, still kind of getting back in, but that's a guy that they know can play.
And we keep hearing about Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson at left tackle, I think, is the future of that position. Mm-hmm. Can you get him? Can you get enough reps early in the season to kind of let him get some butterflies out, and then maybe by the middle of the year he becomes your starter? Then you move Dylan Wade back inside. I think that's a possibility. But
I wonder. I mean, that's the thing. The options that they have, I would imagine they would prefer not to have to move somebody in to out to back in.
Correct. Yeah, I think Dylan's a guy that has done it, but he's played tackle more than he had. This is the first time he's really ever played guard. Mm-hmm. So he's been a tackle. I think for his future, they were like, hey, let's move him inside because he's a natural guard. But if it's the best five,
he's the best left tackle you have
now. Here's the thing, especially if it makes your best five.
Right.
If you're better with somebody else at guard than you are with Percy at tackle, then you better play the best five you have.
And yeah, I like that way of looking at it. So your best five, you know who your best four are.
Correct.
You know who your best four is your fifth best guy a guard or a tackle?
Correct.
And that depends
because you know it's just a matter of is your next best player, is it Dylan Wade at guard and Percy at left tackle or is your next guest guy? And I think because of Tate Johnson, Braden, those guys probably feel better about inserting those guys at guard right now. And I think maybe that'll change down the line. That's why they do so much experimentation, especially after the first scrimmage. We saw it even in that first Saturday that we were there. Tate Johnson went in at left guard some, and they put him in there in place of Dylan Wade. Mm-hmm. Just, okay, what's it going to look like? I think that's what offensive line coaches do. The good thing is that they've got some options. Had this been the case the last couple of years, and you go like, well, there weren't many places to go plug in the next guy. This group has more options. Now it's just a matter of kind of finding which one you think is the best one. And you still got, I mean, obviously game week is next week, but you still got a little time to kind of get this thing sorted out.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, it's another reason why there's some people I know that aren't thrilled with the fact that Auburn's got five straight games at home to get things started, and a couple of those ball games aren't the kind of games that get the fan base really excited. But if you've got some questions, you're looking for some answers, you're looking to build some experience, get some young guys playing time, these should be a couple of great opportunities, starting with Alabama A&M.
I think for this team, because you know you're going to play so many young guys, so many true freshmen are going to play. You got transfers. I think this schedule probably works out. To me, it's the same thing when I think about the basketball schedule, and we'll touch on that too. But I think for basketball perspective, this is the perfect year to play really tough. You got older guys. Mm-hmm. You got guys that are here. Next year, you won't want to do as much of that.
No.
I think from a
football, you wouldn't want to be doing that with this football team.
Yes, if you have an experienced football team that has a bunch of guys that have played a lot of football and are coming back, you'd probably say, hey, we'd rather go on the road two or three times early. This team probably works out better to go, hey, see if you can build some confidence. Play at home. Get some of those things. Would you like to have five at home? No, but I think it's better than the alternative.
Which is like,
hey, let's go on the road to USC game one or whatever it was. Some of those types
and
of schedules.
And have problems there in the offensive line. I think
Alabama A&M is the perfect opportunity for this team to go out and to – I mean, obviously you're going to need to go win it, but to treat it like a game where NFL teams do where they go, let's look at different – pieces to this to see what it looks like. Obviously, you want to go out and build some confidence, do those things, go execute, and then see what happens. I think this is the type of schedule that you can do some things with.
Yeah. Now, every Wednesday, I spent a little time with Wimp and Barry Sanderson, and they were talking about that a little bit and said, you know, this should be the kind of game that you would like to have at the beginning. But then on the other hand, you also don't want to go out and have one of those – oh man, just really ugly ball games where it's a game in the middle of the third quarter, either.
Yeah, and no, you don't. But you know what? Neither one of those things guarantees what happens the rest of the year.
No, that's true.
It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, if you lose now, that's a different story.
Correct. But if you go out and slop around some and don't play well, I mean, Alabama's done that against Chattanooga and other teams. We've seen Georgia do it against Kent State and. It doesn't really matter. You just have to win a game, try to stay healthy, and would it be great to go out and score 45 in the first half, be clicking on all cylinders, get a bunch? Absolutely. But in the end, how you play other than winning or losing doesn't really determine even the next week. We saw it last year. I mean, it just doesn't matter.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover with me here in the studio. Dan out today. We'd love for you to join in, and you can do so by calling the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390. Or you can text us on the Drive text box, which is presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. And the number to get you through on the text box is 334-564-1390. 1840. We'll get to our first break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
At Reynolds Outdoor Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Wednesday afternoon. We were trying to find something. Jason just mentioned we were talking a little baseball here during the break, and Jason said something about a strikeout guy. Nolan Gorman of the Cardinals, I saw that he got sent down earlier today. The second baseman with a lot of pop. I think he's hit 19 homers this year. But Jason quoted a stat, and it is amazing, but they don't say who the other guys are. He has the only three players in the history of Major League Baseball and that have had at least 400 plate appearances in a season have struck out at a higher rate than Nolan Gorman. That is 19,605 players in Major League history. He is number 19,602.
That's incredible.
In strikeout rate. So, yeah, I wonder why he got sent down. Because I saw the batting average. I did not realize that he was whiffing at that higher rate. All right. Jason Caldwell of Auburn Undercover in the studio here with Bill on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Let's get to The Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. 334-321-1390. And JD is in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, JD.
Hey guys, good to hear y'all from so far away. The app's awesome. I appreciate y'all having the app because it affords people like me to be able to get into some good Auburn sports and not have to listen to that bomb mess on satellite radio.
Oh yeah, hey, well yeah. I'm glad you found us, and great to hear from you.
And I guess everybody out there is they're on the Dylan Rayola train today. I guess he got named a starter out there. So
yeah. That app works great, and I advise anybody that loves listening to you guys to tune in because it works well. Works real well.
Oh, that's great to hear.
My question is, how much depth do we have at the running back position? I haven't seen much depth behind Jarquez and
Damari.
Jeremiah Cobb. Damari, is he up and healthy? I haven't heard his name mentioned much.
Yeah, Damari's been good.
As a matter of fact, Derek Nix talked about him a little bit today, saying how much better he's gotten in pass pro and catching the ball.
Yeah, looks really good physically. I think their first three guys are really solid. Sean Jackson, in the summer, was working camps, was going to be a student coach.
Right.
Once the Brian Battee news happened, Sean Jackson decided to come back. So Sean Jackson is back on the roster, which gives him another guy. So that gives him a fourth guy that has played.
And Justin Jones has been playing special teams.
Correct.
A good bit last year. And I mean, he's not a little bitty undersized guy. He's a pretty good size, actually a sort of a tall running back at around 6'1", 205.
Yeah, Nicole Gamble is a walk-on kid from Mount Brook who's a really good football player that could be a guy that could be an emergency guy too. So they have three true scholarship guys, but they got some guys I think would be fine in a pinch for them.
Let me ask you this. Is Alvin Henderson, is he a early sign or is he a regular signing day?
Right now, I assume most guys to be early guys unless I find out any different. I hadn't heard anything from Alvin on that yet. Sometimes it's a little more difficult at smaller schools.
Yeah, it's funny how people sometimes smaller schools aren't
because
as prepared to
you
be
don't
able
have
to
as much
get the coursework.
So I had to find out from him on kind of his plans. The good news is that if there's a position where it's not as big of a deal to be in, running back would probably be at the top of the list.
Yeah, and Auburn, I don't think, is done signing running backs.
Yeah, they're going to try to get another guy for sure.
Is Alvin 100%?
Yeah, he's good to go. Yeah, he was back healthy at the end of the year last year. Should be good to go and try to get out and watch him. I think our plan probably later in the year, they play Brantley and a couple of schools like that. So try to get to see him sometime later this season.
Well, hey, it's good to hear you guys, and I've been loving it, especially with it being so close to game time, and looking forward to it. I'm out here working right now, but I'm be in town for the game. So,
oh, that's great.
That's Jason, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, hey, I remember going out to Los Angeles with a group of guys back when we played USC. And,
yeah.
Stayed out there. What is it? Long Beach.
We were in Long Beach and had to get together the night before, and yeah, we had a great time out there. It was except for the game.
Got a little bit of
an earthquake along while we were out there too. So we got to experience a little bit of everything.
And it was hot. It was real hot that weekend. I remember. Yep. Fun time. All right. Well, hey, War Eagle.
Great hearing from you, JD. 334-321-1390. Okay, well, I was going to guess Joey Gallo.
Yeah, there you go.
He is the worst
all time. And I don't think it's even close, I believe. See, this is 39.8. Joey Gallo, Melvin Nieves was two. Keon Broxton.
I didn't know that he got to 400 plate appearances.
Yeah,
struck out
405. So. And then Keon Broxton from the Brewers in 2017. Yep. Yeah, so you look at this list and the top eight guys, that's all I can see.
They're all fairly recent, aren't they?
Only 1997. Everybody after that has been since 2017.
Who was the 97?
That was Melvin Nieves.
Oh, okay.
So that tells you that that's how the game's changed.
Oh, yes.
They've all been the last, 7 years.
Mm-hmm. 334-321-1390. Let's get back to the phone, and John is up next. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Doing good, John.
I hope you don't mind me changing the subject a little bit, but this question has been bugging me, and I even went to ChatGPT about it today. Sometime in the early 1980s, Auburn basketball game, Beard Eves, the referees didn't show up for the game. They had been told the wrong time. Do you guys remember that?
Golly, I'm – it seemed – I – I feel like I do, but I don't have full detail. I remember when Auburn and LSU didn't play because what was it, chicken pox or something?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like yes, you're right, because I mean I don't know that I've missed many home basketball games since before the 80s, and that feels right. I'm sure, as a matter of fact, the I bet I'll get a text here.
Yeah, I don't remember that one,
but it sounds right.
Well, everybody was there. I was playing. I was in the band. The band was there. The fans were there. The teams were. I think they had even been warming up on the court.
When were you?
Wasn't it was it a situation where we were there in the afternoon and the officials thought it was an evening game? Is that what it was?
That's right.
That's what it feels like. I don't remember who the opponent was.
What years were you in the band? What, so we could kind of narrow it down.
I was in band from 79 to 85.
Oh wow.
Okay.
And when they made it a night game, I was in the pit orchestra for a musical in the theater, and so I had to show up for the night game in my tuxedo.
That's good.
Maybe we'll get a text from somebody.
Yeah, keep listening, because I had a text, but it was from my sister. I was thinking Floyd would probably text me and let me know, because we were usually at ball games together, and I do feel like I recall that, but I don't remember who the opponent was.
That was something that the AI didn't find.
Yeah, because that's not the kind of thing it wouldn't show up in a stats. I mean, yeah. If the game was played, then that would be something that'd be a little more difficult to find.
Right. Well, anyway, thanks for taking my call. I'll keep listening.
Okay, John. Yeah, got us a project here today. We're trying to help John out, and I think he's right. I mean, I feel like I remember this. That there was a game. Yeah, the game was expected to be, maybe it was going to be earlier and it was late afternoon or something like that. But whatever, the officials were late arriving. I mean, very late arriving. They weren't there anywhere near time that was scheduled for tip off. So if you recall that, have any memories of that, yeah, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar.
The 80s basketball officials that I remember were games were like, you know, Tommy Joe Eagles getting tossed and standing in the, and you can see his face in the tunnel through the glass as he's watching through the window underneath the set. That was LSU and Dale Brown game, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I remember some of those types of things, but
yep.
Don't remember that. I sent a text, so we'll see if we can get a response.
334-321-1390. We'll go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. We've got today we had the coordinators, offensive, defensive, and special teams coordinators today. We've had plenty of opportunities. Jason, I bet we've talked to more than half the team.
I was thinking about the other day. I bet we're in the upper 40s to 50s.
I was just going through because we've had six or seven players multiple times. So I feel like, yeah, we're over the 40. We're over 40. And, we're right at the 85 number or something,
yeah,
on, as far as scholarships.
I agree.
We're right around the 50% mark. It's been great here in the preseason. Let's get to our bottom of the hour break. Again, if you can recall the time that John felt like it was in the early 80s, and that seems right, that Auburn was getting ready to play an SEC game, and the officials had the wrong time and didn't show. They did make it in, as I recall, and we played. I don't remember how much later it was, but if you've got any info on that, we're trying to help JD recall that and help us recall that as well. We'll be back with more with Jason Caldwell here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 28 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Another, like I said, a beautiful day. We're talking, I mean, we had that storm with the high winds the other day. And since then, cooler weather, and it's been with us for a few days, going to stick around for a few more. So enjoy it while you can. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here in the studio. And Jason, I mean, it's getting close. We're 10 days away from the opening kick. What are your biggest questions about this team as we head up, you know, into game week?
Yeah, I don't know. I think offensive line is going to be okay. It's just a matter of kind of settling it, because I mean Dylan Wade I thought was fine last year at offensive tackle. I thought they just didn't have enough bodies, and I thought the offensive scheme itself was more of an issue than the offensive line was. And so I think that'll be fine. When I look at it, I'm like, okay, probably rotation wide receiver, because you have a bunch of guys.
I asked Derek, how many receivers can you legitimately play?
I mean, 7-8.
He said, well, the way he answered it was, Marcus Davis would probably tell you right now that he feels really good about 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And that's probably about what you're going to be able to play. You can't play 9.
A lot of it depends on.
Or it's very hard to.
A lot of that depends on, and this may be part of it too, what's your identity going to be as an offense? And I think we've seen Hugh Freeze enough in his background to know that they do want to run the football, because it's an RPO scheme, and you got to be able to run it.
Right.
So I honestly feel pretty good about the offense. I really do. Can you make those plays? We heard Hugh Freeze say, look, they made some of these crazy one-on-one plays. Mm-hmm. That's how you go from, 20 points a game to 31 a game.
Make
two or three of those plays.
And that's also, I mean, there's some, sometimes a quarterback's not going to throw every pass perfectly. Nope. You got to put it up there.
Correct.
And guys, get it.
Go get it.
And that's the difference in being a 60 and a 65% to 70% accurate.
And I've been saying too, you got to have guys that can take the 8-yard out route, make a guy miss,
and
get
turn it
20
into,
extra yards. Not you don't even have to score a shot, but to get a chunk yardage play. They've got more of those guys. So my question still, and honestly, I think the secondary is talented. I think there's some guys that can play. They just got to grow up a little bit. My question's still on the defensive front. I feel really good about the Buck linebacker or Jack linebacker.
I think they will get after quarterbacks. I think the pass rush is going to be much improved.
I think it is from the outside. Do you have any inside guys?
Right.
That's the question. Do you have somebody that can push the pocket? Because that's a big deal. I think they've got guys. I think Keldrick Falk's going to be fine. I think Amaris Williams is going to be fine. I like those guys outside in pass rush, Jalen McLeod and Kieron Crawford and the young guys. Can you find a guy inside that you can count on to be a playmaker? That's still my biggest concern. I think linebackers are come on. DeMarcus Riddick's really come on. Robert Woodyard's come on. I think the safety spot's going to end up being a strength before it's over with. I like Jaron Thompson. I think Sylvester Smith's going to be good. Caleb Harris is a true freshman to watch that hasn't gotten a ton of talk. I think he's going to be in the mix at safety back there. Caleb Wooden's there too. Defensive line has been my one spot from the spring, from the end of last year. It's still my spot. They got more options, but can you find a guy in the middle that can be a guy that can push the pocket, create some havoc, do some of those things? That's probably still my biggest question.
I was wondering, I mean, I did not realize, I guess, until Coach Freeze mentioned that Austin Keys has still been out after that first scrimmage. Robert Woodyard could be somebody who's really, really important this year for him to step up, because If Austin is limited, and he was banged up a little bit last year, you've got Eugene Asante, Darian Mosey, and the next guy I would guess is Robert.
Yeah, and I think there are, again, I think you've got options. And
I love the potential of DeMarcus Riddick.
Yes, correct. And you know, I think he'll be special teams early, get on the field, play more, get some of those things. And DJ Barber is old school KJ Britt.
Right.
Quentin Riggins type guy.
Yeah, he's a downhill.
He's 6 foot, 230 pounds. Absolutely. And so I think he's a guy that has some things that you can play and live with too. So the good thing is Austin Keys, we saw him even last week. It was dealing with an issue, but he was already doing some things with trainers, moving around, which makes me believe, hey, this guy's played a bunch of football.
Yep. Let's just get him ready.
Get him to the first game. I think we've seen the same thing with Keontae Scott going, look, know that guy can play. We don't need anything lingering. Let him get healthy. Meanwhile, let these young guys get all these reps. I think we've seen some of them and some of that from the staff going, hey, let's make sure those guys get there to the first game.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Glenn is up next. Hey, Glenn.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I've got a question. Bear with me because I may not ask it the right way. But assuming Freeze is the answer and everything goes as well as you could expect it, how long do you think before we every year we're planning on, you know, possibly playing for the national championship or the SEC championship or when we're up there with the talks of Georgia and stuff like that?
I think in this era, the goal is to get yourself in position to be in the top 12. Then you have then you're in that discussion. I think it's a different feel than it has been for the past 15 years, which is, we feel like about three teams, maybe four, and you go, that's about it. I think if you go out and you can get to 8-9 wins this year, then I think because of the way you're recruiting, then I think you're going, hey, look, you're knocking on the doorstep.
Nine wins may get you in.
Nine may get
in
you
this
there.
League.
Correct. Depends on who it is.
Right.
And when it is. But I don't think because it's 12, I don't think it's as far away as it's felt like because of the way you're recruiting. Now you got to go out and do it and produce it. I think another class like this, and I think you go into next season, depending on what the quarterback looks like, I think you go into next season from a talent standpoint going, okay, now you feel like from a talent, athletic, number standpoint that you can go compete with Alabama, Georgia, and Texas, and Oklahoma. I think that starts next year, even though you're not as far away this year, just a matter of kind of those guys growing up a little bit.
Okay, awesome. I just have one more question, and I'll leave it alone. And
sure.
Listen, my family got blessed to just happen upon the temporary change house or whatever for when they went to Vanderbilt.
The trailer park back there. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it was kind of cool because we got to see a lot of players, and I ended up getting to take a picture with Coach Freeze and my little girls, and it was awesome. It was super nice. I like everything he's been doing, but is he on par with everything y'all expect him to be, and do you think he is the answer?
Yeah, I think, well,
as far as being on par, I think things may be ahead of what a lot of
correct.
People would have expected
I think we said from the get-go, the one thing that didn't happen from the last hire was fit. And fit is so important at Auburn. And I think Freeze is a guy that fits what you're looking for because he understands, first of all, what this place is about, having coached against Auburn and having – Gus Malzahn been here for so long. He understands it. The main fit is this is a guy that understands you got to go get good players and you got to go recruit at a high level. I think those two things, yes.
Not only does he understand, he is one of the better head coaches at doing that.
Correct. And so I think those are, and I've said forever, I'm like, talent acquisition is the most important thing you can do. And he and this staff understands that. Does it guarantee success? No. But if you don't have them, you're not going to win. And so I think they understand that. Now start to take the next steps on the field, I think, is the key.
Awesome. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for everything.
Hey, appreciate the call, Glenn. Now, the net, you know, and one of those next steps, Jason, when Hugh Freeze was at Ole Miss and at Liberty, there'd be a game occasionally where they appeared to be the better team and they didn't win. Now they, I still don't think that they were ever, as talented as the best teams that they were playing with and beating sometimes mm-hmm. in the SEC. And that's just something that comes along once, you hope you get to that point where you're not going to, you're good enough to be able to go out there, and when you don't play well, win those ball games.
That's the key, because yes, it those are the games that then talent takes over.
Yeah,
because you're preparing the same way. You're not going into that game going, because people get this misconception, or they're looking ahead. Well, they're not out there practicing for Georgia or Alabama. Those things don't happen. Now, mentally, a guy's going, "Hey, mm-hmm. man, let's just get this one over with." Yeah, those things happen, but that's. Hey, it happens at Georgia. It happens at Alabama.
That's right.
But the difference is those guys are good enough that it doesn't matter.
That's exactly right.
And that's the
key. That's what a lot of people don't understand. They go, well, they didn't lose those ball games. Yeah, but look at the talent those teams
have.
Correct.
That's the difference is when they're putting their second guy in there, that guy's a 4- or 5-star guy who's got something to play for that day. When you're putting guys in there that aren't that good, they might have something to play for, but they're not good enough.
Yep.
I mean,
that's
so
right.
That's the difference. And so you're right. That's the key. When you go, be good enough to overcome the games where, man, we just didn't have any juice. We didn't have any energy. Okay. Again, Georgia has those games. Alabama has those games. Everybody has those mm-hmm. games because you can't play at that level for 13, 14, 15 weeks.
Coach Dye used to talk about it. I mean, you can only play at your peak a few times.
You can't do it. And so, yes, I think – the more good players you have, the more you're able to overcome those type of games.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one, talk a little basketball, maybe a little baseball as well. When we come back, love for you to join in. 334-321-1390 here on The Drive.
At Reynolds After 502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one here on this Wednesday afternoon. Bill and Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. Dan, feel a little under the weather today, but says he should be fine tomorrow. And Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer should be in. I doubt I will be in tomorrow. I've got a little general anesthesia before the carpal tunnel. So don't know how coherent I will be. I don't know how coherent I am anyway, but anyway, so we should be set for tomorrow. Jason, the SEC releasing the conference games, the schedule for SEC games. Interesting that they've got midweek where you have possibilities of Tuesday or Wednesday mm-hmm. for all the midweek games.
Yeah, don't have those things set. Boy, you look at it, and I mean,
I like the way the weekend games.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got both the Alabama games are weekend games. Your game against when you travel to Kentucky, it's a Saturday. You've got Tennessee and Florida at home on Saturdays.
Yeah, I just thinking about the road games for this team. When you think about the non-conference, obviously we know what that's going to be like, but then. You're talking about going to Texas early in January.
Well, it's a good thing. I mean, with that non-conference schedule, you should be ready for the road. And you go
Correct.
On the road 5 of your first 8 games.
Yes, and so you go to Texas, to South Carolina, back-to-back. And then, you're at Georgia, at LSU, at Ole Miss. But, you look and you go at Texas, at Alabama, at Kentucky, at Texas A&M, in addition to the non-conference
games.
Well,
Kentucky and A&M are right there at the last
they are.
Two road games before you got Alabama at home
Alabama
to close
at
it out.
Home to close it out. Yeah, it's challenging. I still don't know that it's as challenging as the women's schedule that came out today.
I haven't had a chance to really look at that.
Yeah,
like I said, I was doing a little yard work when that came out.
Auburn's at LSU, at Kentucky, at Mississippi State, at South Carolina, at Oklahoma, at Tennessee, at Alabama, at Georgia. So you have LSU.
Whoa.
You have LSU, South Carolina on the road.
Right.
Oklahoma was a 5 seed last year in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, Kentucky's been pretty good. Then Alabama, Georgia. That's difficult. You get Texas at home, obviously, because you play everybody on that side. Mm-hmm. But when I looked up and I went at LSU and at South Carolina and at Tennessee.
Are they still sticking with the same number of conference games? I know men's are sticking with 18. Are the women still sticking with the 16?
12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Okay.
Yep, so 16. So you're looking at that one. That's a challenging one when you start talking about playing. I mean, South Carolina is the best program in the country right now. There's no question about that. LSU, right up there with them. And then,
playing them on the road, man. That you're right.
Yeah, that's tough. That's a challenging schedule for them. So yeah, but I don't know. It's fun. But then I started thinking about it in terms of other sports, and I know we'll talk about baseball a little bit, but you know, like baseball, softball, every schedule now that you look at, you're gonna go, whew.
Yeah, man, there's no way around it.
There's nothing you can do about it. Softball is going to be the worst. It's going to, I mean, because of Oklahoma, Texas.
Oh yeah,
being two of the top three or four programs in the country.
Well, you've got 15 teams that were in the NCAA last year because only 15 played.
Baseball is going to be brutal. I mean, Oklahoma and Texas are both really good in baseball.
Well, what's going to be very interesting in baseball is who gets the luck of the draw, because you're only going to be playing 10. Of the 15 teams.
Correct. The flip side is that there's not really anybody to avoid.
No, right.
You'd hope you get Missouri. Everybody's going to be rolling the dice, hoping they get Missouri in that one. But after that, they're like, they're not really anybody else. There's nowhere you go other than Missouri and go, whew, man, we feel good about that. Like, that's it. Yeah. And so, it's going to be a challenge. And I had a chance. I stopped in baseball this week, and boy, the newcomer group that's on campus is an impressive group. Everybody's bigger nowadays, but you look at these guys, and I'm like, man, this looks like a bunch of 20, 21, 22 year old guys that are walking through the door, and they haven't even gotten to the fall strength and conditioning program and practicing here another month and a half or so. But I mean, you got five or six guys that are mid 90s or above on the mound. Connor Gatwood's 97, 98. He may throw as hard coming in as any pitcher that's ever thrown at Auburn. And Chase Alsop was right there.
Right.
But position players, transfer guys, older, mature guys, there's going to be a lot of competition.
Oh, no question.
In this fall.
That.
And I think that's going to be a fun thing to watch.
And we still don't know for sure roster sizes.
No, don't know.
I mean, we didn't get.
I think it's going to be 40 for this year, in terms of the roster size itself. Mm-hmm. We don't know moving forward, and that's why I asked this. You know, last week we had Karen Hoppe. How do you recruit?
Yeah,
you don't know how many.
How many spots you're going to have for the class you're recruiting.
No, and that's it, and that's what you're doing. You're recruiting for the next year. Baseball, you know, it's going to be 34. That's all you know, but you don't know if it's going to. I don't think it's going to be 34 scholarships. I don't think it's going to be 34 full. I don't believe it's going to be 105 or 90, whatever it is.
105.
Think it's going to be 105 full football.
I think it'll be 105 spots.
Correct.
However many scholarships.
And
90 maybe?
And everybody can have a piece of a scholarship. Yeah. I think it's going to be the same thing in baseball. I think 22 to 24.
It obviously needs to go up from the 11.7.
It's going to go up to, I believe, 20 is going in the SEC. It'll be more than 20 because the SEC will be able to fund those things. If you're in the MAC or Sun Belt, it may be 15, mm-hmm. maybe. But there's going to be more. I just don't think it's going to go, hey, we're full board 34.
We're going full scholarships on everything.
The question is, how does it all work with Title IX? Does football remove itself and become a separate entity to allow those things
if
to happen?
If they don't do that, then they're going to have to go a lot more scholarships for, like, track.
And that's the thing.
Women's track.
I don't see that happening. I think football is going to have to be a separate part of this somewhere down the line.
Yeah, I think so.
Because of the numbers and try to make it work.
I've seen some of the outside. What are things looking like?
Yeah, it's really good. They've kind of cleared out behind the monster in left field where Auburn's bullpen was. It will remain there. They're going to give them a little bit more room, but they're also going to create some almost like a Jordan-Hare ramp
to get to the top,
where they're going to put mm-hmm. seats on top of that. But they're going to have a wall back there. It's going to be a much nicer bullpen area for them.
Good.
just the construction, having the solid roof down the first baseline, it's going to feel like an environment that creates a home field environment. It's already been that way the last few years, but you can see it start to come together.
It looks so good.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I think it's going to be fun.
I've ridden by.
Yeah, so I think they're excited. The players right now, their locker room is the football locker room at the complex. Because they're tearing all that out. They redo all those things. The coaches will end up moving upstairs, and it used to be the kind of the where the doctor's offices are. Mm-hmm. They'll move upstairs, be a weight room. So there's a lot of changes that'll be done this fall to do that, but it's coming around.
That's great. Jason, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything all you guys are doing.
Yep, AuburnUndercover.com, part of the 24/7 network. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram at ITATJason. Like I said, lots of football as we head into game week, but recruiting stuff, we'll be on the road the next couple of nights as well, so check us out.
Great stuff. Thanks again, man.
Appreciate it.
All right, back with hour number two. Stick with us here on The Drive.
It's capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this really nice looking and feeling Wednesday afternoon. It's been a really nice last few days. Hour number two of the show just getting underway. In the first hour, Jason Caldwell of Auburn Undercover was here in the studio. Hope you had a chance to hear JC. If you missed any of that or any of our shows, check out the podcasts of The Drive, which are brought to you by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They're also the sponsor of our text box, The Drive text box, 334-564-1840. Hour number two of The Drive, brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care. I'm going to see them tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Try to get taken some problem in the old throwing arm. It's not the throw. I don't throw with it much anymore. It's like lifting and doing anything else with it. So I'm going to get that seen about. The Orthopedic Clinic with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. And you can join in here on The Drive. Give us a call on The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390. Well, today, let's see, we've had plenty of access all fall practice with so many players. Jason was counting, and it's been at least 40 players that we have spoken to. How about that? 40 different players. I doubt that there are many schools anywhere in the country that have made 40 players available to the media. But Auburn has done that, and we're going to get more players tomorrow. Well, I should say Dan will get some more players tomorrow because, yeah, I am sure that midday tomorrow I will be in no shape to be interviewing players. But we'll get more players tomorrow, and I don't believe we've had a repeat. I believe it's been different guys every single time out, so it's been great as we've spent time with so many players, some that have been here for for quite a while, others that are newcomers that are just here. We've talked to some players that have only been here, since the summer. But it has been a good camp thus far. Today we had the opportunity to sit down and talk with the coordinators. And I thought, while we have the opportunity, don't have any calls. Again, love to hear from you because I want to get into a couple of things a little later on. The SEC today finally released the tiebreakers for the SEC championship game. We can get into that. I mean, basically, it's head-to-head and then common opponents, record against common opponents, starting with the team with the best record on down. That is the quick way through the early tiebreaker formulas for either the two teams that are tied for the first or teams that are tied for second. But so we've got that. I would also love to get some response from people, because I was asked this question, as I mentioned earlier. Wednesdays, I spent about 15 minutes with Wimp and Barry Sanderson on their show in Tuscaloosa. Now, Barry's son, Wimp's grandson, is one of those baseball players that that Jason was talking about, one of the incoming players. His 6'4 lefty, Jack Sanderson, is one of the freshman baseball players at Auburn. I guess that's sort of why. It's funny, as we're wrapping things up today, I got a War Eagle from Barry Sanderson, which is, I thought, wow. But I guess he's got to get used to saying that with his son here at Auburn. But one of the things that they asked about, we were talking basketball schedule, and I said, you know, I love the fact that Alabama is the final game of the regular season It was the final game of the regular season, but it's a home matchup against Alabama on a Saturday, March 8th. And I said, wonder how the entire season, if that might change the feelings, because if Alabama were one of the early conference games, the Auburn fans, especially the students, are going to let Aiden Holloway have it. And we were talking a little bit about, you know, how that would be coming back. And then one of them asked, what would the reaction be if Bo Nix came back to Auburn? Because today, Bo Nix announced as the starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos. And I know there were an awful lot of Auburn fans who felt Bo Nix will never make it to the NFL. He's overrated. He's not any good. He's going to flop at Oregon. He won't make it to the NFL. Well, he's in the NFL. He's going to be the starting quarterback for the Broncos. But they asked, what would the reaction be? And I said, I think Bo'd get a pretty good reaction at Auburn. I said, you know, there'll be some that still are bitter, but I think most Auburn people would give Bo Nix a warm response. But I'd love to hear from people how you feel. Because, yeah, I heard some other talk earlier today from people that just didn't think he'd ever be any good. And look, so Bo Nix, in my opinion, Bo Nix did everything he could do physically to try to win ball games for Auburn. He loved Auburn. People may argue that, but no. Look, Bo's got his degree from Auburn. It wasn't Bo's fault that he had not just different head coaches, he had different coordinators just about every year, and didn't have the greatest supporting cast either. But I'd love to hear you on that as well. We've got all kinds of things we can talk about. We have all kinds of audio we can let you hear. I want to let you hear from the coordinators, but again, your calls come first. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And G is up first. Hey, G.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the call. And so your question is, as far as, like, what would my reaction be toward Bo if he was to come back to Auburn, say they introduced him or whatever? That's
yeah.
what you're
yes.
asking? Oh, I was always a Bo Nix supporter. I just felt like the O-line didn't give him a chance, and so he was always running for his life. That's the way I looked at it. And, you know, Bo, I think, saw the writing on the wall. I think he wanted to get to the NFL, you know, by going to somewhere like Oregon. He was able to and had, you know, a good cast around him. He was able to show what he could do, and he did it. And so, I would – Bo's a Auburn guy. You know, he got his degree. He gave the best he could, I think, here. So that's my opinion.
I am with you 100%. I mean, people that criticize Bo for being too quick to take off and run, what would they rather have had him do? Standing there and be carried off the field, which he you know, which he actually had just about be done at the end of his career. If he wasn't as athletic as he was, he wouldn't have been able to keep Auburn in as many ball games as he did.
I mean, my gosh, Auburn is the Nick family is Auburn as it gets.
Absolutely.
But he had the opportunity to go to Oregon, and, you know, I can't blame him for it. I really can't. So that's the way I feel about it. Hey, one thing that I did think about, and this is totally unrelated, but, you know, with Oklahoma and Texas coming in, I thought about how, you know, Texas just despises fans and to do the horns down.
Right.
And, oh, my gosh, that now they're coming here. I just think that's like,
they're just asking for it.
Oh,
you're not kidding. And the SEC has said, hey, that it's not even a penalty to do it on the field unless you're obviously deliberately taunting.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's great. I remember, I think I've been to two Texas games here at Auburn, the one back in 83.
Uh-huh.
And then they made another return. I cannot remember the year, but I know we beat them pretty good. So I remember people were doing horns down then. So they better get used to it because it's going to happen.
Oh, they're going to see it. You're right. They're going to see it everywhere they go.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's all I got. But anyway, have a good rest of your show.
Hey, it's great hearing from you, G. Take care. Yeah, let's see. What was I thinking about? Oh, I know. The other thing is, you know, when you think about Bo Nix, I mean, Bo Nix, for what he had done when Brian Harsin came in, it was pretty much, all right, we're going to have a quarterback competition again. And I'd forgotten, it was reminded to me this morning by the Sandersons, that Alabama will see T.J. Finley. He's now at Western Kentucky. So he has moved on to another school and is there. Hey, he had a really good year last year at Texas State. So he's good for TJ. But in the meantime, Bo's about to be the starting quarterback for the Broncos. 334-321-1390. That's the drive. Oh, I did get a note from Floyd a little while ago. Didn't get a chance to mention it in the first hour, and he said, "Yeah, that sounds right." He sort of, I think, has the same feeling that I do. Maybe our memories are going at about the same rate. But he said it does seem like, yes, there was a game in the early '80s. We were talking. JD called in and was wondering if anybody could remember a basketball game, an Auburn basketball game in the early '80s, when the officials didn't show on time. And I said, yeah, that sounds, it seems right to me as well. It seems like we got there, everybody was there, the officials didn't show, and they came in later. Like it was supposed to be a 12 o'clock game, and they didn't show up until 1 o'clock or something like that. Floyd said it seems like they got a couple officials there about an hour after the schedule started. It may have actually been they got some replacement officials in where they were thinking it was a night game and it was an afternoon game. His suggestion is to ask Sonny Smith on the air because that'd probably be a great story. And I think he's absolutely right about that. So if anybody remembers that, because I don't recall who the game was against. It seemed like all the crazy things happened against LSU, but maybe that's just because Dale Brown, I mean, you just never could tell what was going on with Dale Brown. But if anybody has a memory of that, love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We're going to get to our first break. And if we don't have any calls, we're going to let you hear some of the comments from the coordinators today. There comes a call right there. So I tell you what we'll do. We'll go ahead and get to the call before we get to break, not make them have to wait through the break. So John is up next on the drive. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. A couple things. As far as Bo goes, Bo really got a raw deal. You know, I think the straw that broke the camel's back was when Harsin fired Bobo, and Bo heard about it through the media. He didn't even talk to him. And, you know, a lot of people said Bobo was terrible. He went to Georgia, and they had their best offense in years.
Right.
But I think he was just kind of shunned that after he got, you know, he hurt his ankle that year. And after the Alabama game, I don't think he had heard from Harsin one time until the day he quit. So, you know, Bo still loves Auburn. Like I said, he has a degree. I think his wife has her degree from here, both of his parents.
Yeah, absolutely.
But got to ask you about that Earth, Wind, and Fire concert, Bill. Did is Verdeen White, the bass player that's so crazy, is he not with them?
He is still with them. Yeah, he is one of the three that is still with them. Yeah, man, he is still
Watch him.
He is wild to watch. Man, he never stops.
Never stops moving whatsoever. But I heard y'all talking about Bo, and I've never watched Oregon football unless the game we played against them, but I watched most of the Oregon games last year, and I watched the preseason game the other night when he started.
He looked pretty darn good, didn't he?
He sure did. I'm all team Bo. I wish he would have stayed here, but I don't blame him one bit for leaving. And as far as basketball, I got another. You might remember this. It would have been probably in 1987. Auburn High and Valley High were like number one and two in the state. And Valley had that Bryant Lancaster kid.
Sure do.
And Auburn had a really good team. Well, when we were supposed to play a return game at the Valley, you know, their gym is tiny.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved that home game to Auburn, to the Coliseum, on a Friday night. And I think there were 6,500, 7,000 people there that Friday night. Well, Auburn played the next day against one of the Mississippi schools. I think it was Mississippi State. But there were like 2,200 people there. So that was
sad,
kind of
but
the
true.
Rutgers.
Yeah. That's people. Yeah, people now would think, oh, you've lost your mind saying that. But no, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. Listen, enjoying the show, and we'll talk to you later. Be listening.
All right, great hearing from you, John.
By the way, I did listen to you with Wimp and Barry today, and I did hear Barry say that War Eagle.
Yeah.
And my ears must have.
Well, it's like, well, they caught me so much by surprise. I was like, well, here's one for you for next week.
Okay, well.
Don't expect that again.
I think it was probably the first time that's ever come out of your mouth.
It may well be. I don't recall.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care, John. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Wednesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Russell Building Supply is your hometown home improvement store. You'll find what you need when you need it.
211-390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. 21 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Wednesday afternoon. Hey, we have just got word that we have some tickets. If you're interested and would like a pair of tickets to see Everclear and Sister Hazel at the Sweetland Amphitheater in LaGrange Friday night. Show starts at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock our time. Tickets to see Everclear and Sister Hazel. Just call in and let us know. We've got maybe we can give a couple of pairs away. 334-321-1390. That's The Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Dan has been hanging on as we were at break. Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. Regarding your comments about Bo Nix, I believe he came to a basketball game at the end of the year last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after he was done with his 2 years at Oregon, and everybody cheered for him. They actually brought him on the floor, and he held the letter up.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, that's what I was telling him. I mean, it's like there'd be some people that still might hold a grudge or something and feel like, you know, he shouldn't have left or anything. But, no, I mean, he did what he had to do. I mean, he was at Auburn, got his degree. He had a coach that didn't seem to believe in him or believe in bringing any players in around him. And he went where he had a better opportunity, and now he's about to be a starter in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame him for any of that. I mean, that was totally a Harsin screw up.
And yep.
Among all the other things that Harsin seemed to mess up. So, Bo's an Auburn man as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I'm glad he's doing well. And I'll cheer for the Broncos.
Absolutely. Keep watching. Yeah, watch him back in orange and blue.
But I had some interesting thoughts on the schedule. I've been meaning to call it in for a while. You know, I think the schedule is obviously easier this year in terms of the teams that we play.
You're talking football now.
In football.
Oh, yeah.
Schedules.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely not basketball.
No.
But schedules, you know, you can determine how difficult they are based on the teams you play, but you can also be difficult on how you play them. And so, you know, perfect example, like last year, you know, we played on the road at Texas A&M, and Georgia played UAB at home before they came to play us.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're spending 2 weeks, you know, practicing for us. And then the year before, you know, I believe we played LSU, and then Georgia, you know, was playing Missouri, who at the time was one of the weaker teams in the league. And then the year before, we played another really hard game that week of the Georgia game. And then Georgia was playing Vanderbilt, you know.
Yeah, not the case this year. Georgia's schedule is much tougher this year. I mean, not only that it sets up well for Auburn, that they're in Tuscaloosa the week before Auburn goes in, but Georgia has to go, you know, to Alabama, to Texas, and to Ole Miss this year.
Yeah, but then as far, same thing with the schedule though. Last year, you know, we played Georgia, and then we had to go play Ole Miss. Dude, that would be our third really hard game in a row. And then pretty much when you play Georgia, you know, you usually struggle the next game.
You're going to be
so much
beat up
into the Georgia game. So us having a bye after the Georgia game this year is huge. You know, allows us to, you know, recuperate, get everybody back on track. And then, you know, and I think we'll have a great chance at Missouri, you know, especially being an early game. So I think this schedule, you know, I'm not saying we're going to win them all, but I think we have a much better opportunity to win more of them just by the way they fall in place.
Oh, I agree. I think it's tough to have those three straight road games, but you do get an open date in between. But really, in comparison to what Auburn's schedule has looked like for decades, this one looks much more promising.
Yeah, I don't think Georgia will be practicing for us, you know, the week of the Alabama game. So they're definitely
they better
not.
No. I'd be pretty surprised if that were the case.
We'll be all right. I appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
All right, Dan. It's good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. We've given away a pair of tickets to the Everclear at Sister Hazel show over at Sweetland Amphitheater in LaGrange on Friday night. We can give away one more. We can give away one more pair of tickets. So if there's somebody out there that'd like to go see those two, I would. Yeah. We're a little busy on Friday night. Not going to be able to do that. Besides, I don't know if I'll be able to drive. You know, I wonder. I don't know. I'm getting a little more nervous about this as we get a little closer. I'm sure everything will be fine. I know I trust the folks that are doing it. It's just, I don't know. All right. 334-321-1390. We've got some audio. Tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to the bottom of the hour break early. So if you'd like tickets to Everclear and Sister Hazel, you can call in, and that'll also give us time when we come back to run some audio from today when we spoke to the coordinators, defensive coordinator DJ Durkin, offensive coordinator Derek Nix, and Tanner Burns, the special teams coordinator. So we can do that, and of course we'd love to hear from you in the final half hour of the Wednesday Drive. Bill here in the studio, Drew at the controls. Dan will be back in tomorrow. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer should be in as well. And then Friday, I think we should all be here, and Coach Don Dunn will join us as we get ready for, you know, that's going to be every Friday throughout football season. Don will be with us, so looking forward to that. Also, we're trying to see what the best day is for David Paschal as we head back into football. We can do it either Wednesday or Thursday. We'll see whatever works best for David. Speaking of football, I've mentioned a few times we had the opportunity to spend some time with Auburn's coordinators today. So I thought, well, we'll start in the order that we got them. Up first was defensive coordinator DJ Durkin.
Hey, DJ. Brian Stoltz, Auburn Rivals. Your players have been talking about loafs, about getting penalized for not celebrating after turnovers, interceptions, blah, 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 blah. Where did that idea come from?
Ooh, that's a good question. I probably don't remember the origin of it. I think, you know, as coaches, we all take bits and pieces from those we've been around and coached with. But, it's been that way for a while. I just really believe in that as a coach. I think, you know, as a staff, we all do of, you know, on defense, it starts with effort. You got to get hats to the ball. And, you know, effort can make up for a lot of things. It's never going to be perfect. So someone misses a tackle, it's not as big of a miss if there's guys running the ball and that are right there. And, you know, someone, you know, misses an assignment out of their gap. Again, if there's guys flying to the ball, those mistakes don't show up quite as big.
Hey, DJ. Hughes talked about the way that you coach defense, and he said it reminds him a lot of some of the better offensive minds he's been around in terms of just the multiplicity of your defense and your ability to kind of boil it down and communicate it well. Would you agree that you know, you maybe have notes of I guess, some better offensive minds in the way that you try to, you know, coach your defense? And then I guess just in terms of the multiplicity and the communicativeness, just what would you attribute that to?
I just think in the game nowadays, it's you've got to be multiple because of the types of offenses we're facing and the way the tempo is going, meaning, you know, most teams don't huddle anymore. They line up. They want to see what you're in, and then the coordinator's making a call. I think that'll probably be even more prevalent now with the earpiece where they're going to see what you're in, and then you'll be telling the quarterback what they want them to do with it. And so, to me, you've got to present multiple looks. At the same time, there's got to be a way to kind of streamline that and communicate well with your players, because if you're too multiple and you're making mistakes out there, I think on defense that shows up a lot more. I mean, mistakes turn into big plays and possibly touchdowns. And so, you know, we've worked really hard to find a way to be multiple, show multiple looks, but also, you know, create same as for our players, meaning, you know, this call is the same as this. So if it's a couple different things that are the same as for a guy, I think he can handle that. He's just memorizing what the call is, but those are the same techniques you're asking him to do. And you can present different looks for the offense.
DJ, in your experience, what does it take for a true freshman to be able to play in your defense early? I know you've got some guys that maybe have the ability right away, but, you know, just kind of what sets those guys apart?
Yeah, if you look back, we've had true freshmen play at different spots, various spots, just about everywhere we've been. I would never limit a guy to say, well, he's a freshman, and that'd be the reason why he, you know, could or couldn't do something. But I think, okay, so generally for a true freshman, he's got to have the opportunity. He's got to be at a position where, you know, there's some sort of opening or guys are competing for that spot. And I think the other thing is, usually a lot of times lies with their mental maturity. It's the handling of so many different things. When, you know, you're at college the first time, you're starting classes, there's all the other things away from home that are different. And the guys that are mentally mature enough to handle that kind of, time management and those sorts of things, I think then they can handle on the field better. You know, some guys are talented enough and, you know, can help you, but their life is such a mess. It's like you're trying to get that all in line before, because you don't know what you're going to get from them when they're on the field. And I think oftentimes, like, everyone obviously looks at what's on the field, but sometimes it's what's off the field that's trickling in.
Coach, the pass rush is vital. What can you say about who could be the key contributors this year providing a pass rush for Auburn?
Yeah, I've been pleased with our guys throughout training camp in being able to generate a pass rush with four, sometimes even three. I think those guys up front, you know, I mean, J-Mac and Keldrick for sure are guys that everyone, you know, here knows and have played. And they've had really good off seasons, really good training camps. You know, I think, you know, Kieron coming in, it really helps us. I think, you know, he's done a great job, and he's a guy that can win one-on-one. And, you know, a lot of those young guys are all guys that when you get one, you know, Jamonte, those guys are all guys that when you get them one-on-one situations, have been very, been effective, and we're gonna need them to be. I think anytime you can create a pass rush, affect a quarterback, and you know, get them off the spot with not having to pressure all the time to do that, it's very helpful for the defense. And so we're gonna count on those guys and have different packages where they line up in different places to be able to do that.
On the back end, you were talking about liking to play as many players as you can. Who do you feel comfortable with now in the secondary as your week and a half out?
Yeah, it's we're still working very hard to create that depth with those guys, both outside at the corner spots as well as inside. And I think when I say depth too, it's position multiplicity too. Like, you know, to be able to be in a nickel package or a dime package and have those guys, you know, learn more than one spot and be able to bounce around. And so, you know, Coach Kelly, Coach Crime, those guys do a great job with them in the back end. We are going to play multiple guys back there. We feel we have enough talent to do that back there. And so, you know, for us, then it's honing in on what guys, you know, what each guy can handle. You know, sometimes physically they can handle doing multiple things, but it's okay mentally. Are we putting too much on this guy to learn more than one spot? Those are the things right now that we're kind of fine-tuning and going through as we approach a game week to say, okay, now we get into a game plan, and it's really detailed and narrowed down as to what we're doing. What can this guy handle and learn?
You mentioned Amaris and Jamonte. Fries has mentioned previously that he's not sure how useful a redshirt is nowadays, especially with talented freshmen like that. Is that sort of a helpful component for you? Have you, as a coaching staff, maybe talked about, you don't need to worry about that if they can help you five or six plays, just get them in the game? I'm interested to kind of know your perspective on that.
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's not a real conversation we've had to this point of redshirting. To me, it's like any guy that can help us and can play, like, we need to utilize them. I mean, that's in all three phases of the game, right? Offense, defense, special teams. And, you know, certainly there's a long list of ways the landscape of college football has changed in terms of, you know, all the things we can go into. So that being one of them as well. You know, what does that really look like in terms of a guy redshirting? And so, you know, I think usually we make those decisions later in the year, and maybe you get the game after game four, if a guy's played or not, what we're doing, and have those conversations. But we want all of our guys preparing to play and help the team, and anyone that can do that, we're certainly going to utilize.
DJ, you've obviously been through this league a few times. If you could just talk about the challenge of the offensive coordinators you go up against, in addition to the players, obviously, but the offensive coordinators and how you prepare differently for different guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think this conference is the best football in the country, and so it attracts the best players. I feel in recruiting, for the most part, you're recruiting the top level players, and I think it's the same for coaches. You're going to get the top level coaches that want to, you know, everyone that's a competitor, whatever field you're involved in, you want to compete at the highest level, and so I mean we have that. I think there's you know, talented coordinators, and you know, week in and week out, those challenges are different as to what you face, but obviously all these guys are, you know, very good at what they do, and they present issues for us. And I think, again, the way the game's going, the communication of, I think, presents some issues on the defense as well. And those are all things that we're, you know, continue to work through. But it's a great challenge. It's something we embrace every week.
Coach, question about the helmet communication. Have you guys kind of nailed down who are going to kind of be the players, you know, with the units and their helmets? And have you guys experienced any kinks? Or, I mean, just how's that experiment or the newness going on that front?
Yeah, we have. The kinks are they told me sometimes I'm too loud in their ear. So I got to work on that. You know, there's a couple ways of saying the same thing. It may sound differently. But, I don't know how much that on the defensive side that it really changes things. I think it does assist and maybe helps a little bit with communication, but we can't totally go to that's our communication to the players on the field. Just, again, most teams don't huddle. We can't huddle. So I think we're different from the program from that aspect. But we've been working on that since really back in spring and kind of I feel like worked out a lot of the kinks in it. And kind of how we want to do it. And so, you know, some of that may change as we get in the season, maybe, but we've worked on it a bunch.
Hey, DJ. Coach Freeze mentioned DeMarcus Riddick as a freshman who, you know, he said probably isn't getting talked about enough. What have you seen from him, and, you know, how do you think he can contribute this season?
Yeah, DeMarcus is a unique skill set. For his size and length and ability to run and move is pretty dynamic. You know, he played a different position in high school than what he's playing right now. But I think that lends to his ability to, you know, play multiple spots. He looks really good out in open field, open space. But he also looks good in the box because he has good length. He's a physical player. And I just think, you know, he's just scratching the surface because obviously every rep he gets is something where he's at is probably a new one for him, you know. And so you can just see him get better and learn every day out there. So he's definitely a guy that can and will contribute and help us as a freshman.
That's DJ Durkin, Auburn defensive coordinator, as we had a chance to hear from all the coordinators here this afternoon over, as a matter of fact, yeah, it was right at noon. I mentioned earlier the Southeastern Conference released the official football tiebreakers in the event of a tie for first or second in the conference championship game. And I hit the top two quickly. They are in order. The first tiebreaker is head-to-head competition among the tie teams. So if you had three teams tied, you'd go head-to-head record, or however many teams tied. The second tiebreaker is record versus all common conference opponents. So it's not just starting with the top team coming down, because sometimes that's not fair. If the both teams haven't played that team, or one team has and has a win, it'd be against all common conference opponents. That's the second tiebreaker. The third tiebreaker is the record against the highest ranked in the standings common conference opponent proceeding through the conference standings among the tied teams. Again, common opponents. Fourth tiebreaker is cumulative conference winning percentage of all the conference opponents. So that's a winning percentage of all the conference teams that you played. That is the fourth tiebreaker. Fifth tiebreaker would be, now I don't understand this one, capped relative total scoring margin. Wait, it says see Appendix A. Did they attach Appendix A? That I did not read all the way down. Oh my goodness. We'll get in. Yeah, okay. That's the fifth tiebreaker. Hopefully you don't get into that. And the final tiebreaker is just a random draw. So those are for if two teams tie for first place or for second. So that if teams are tied for first or second to determine the participants in the SEC championship game. All right, we will get to our final break of the afternoon. When we come back, we're going to let you hear, either hear from offensive coordinator Derek Nix or special teams coordinator Tanner Burns, but your calls come first if you'd like to join in, 334-321-1390, as we continue with the Wednesday Drive.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive, and as it turns out, it looks like we have just almost exactly enough time to let you hear the comments from offensive coordinator Derek Nix. So here we go.
Derek, there hadn't been a ton of talk about the running backs this camp because everybody's back and have experience. What have you seen from your guys there and just kind of their development as they go into another season?
I think the guys at running back have been working really hard during training camp. I think these guys have been really consistent so far. We've asked them, a lot of them, to be tough in the run game, be able to protect, be able to catch the ball in the backfield, and probably led by Jarquez. He's done a heck of a job of being a tackle breaker, taking hold of the offense and learning everything, and he's been really consistent. You know, Damari Austin, probably right behind him, doing a great job of catching the ball in the backfield, protecting, carrying the football. Probably after that, just kind of the whole group really has been doing a great job overall. I think that they're going to be a plus for us going forward in the season.
Coach, what have you seen out of Peyton Thorne since you arrived, and what are you expecting this year?
I think number one, he's been an extension of the coaching staff. becoming a leader, being a guy that's understanding what we want to get to as a coaching staff, getting us in about the checks, good plays, bad plays, change of protections, getting confident in our receivers and putting the ball and giving them a chance to go make plays. You know, obviously he's got to continue to do that, but so far so good with him. I'm very pleased where he's at right now.
Coach, talk about what Hank's done to be your number two.
Hank, I think since day one, getting here in January, took the bull by the horns and has learned. He's always had great arm talent, in my opinion, but he's been more consistent on the practice field. He's getting to a point now where he knows the offense too, inside and out, and it's kind of showing up in his play lately.
Coach, question about the helmet communications. Any kinks on that front? And have you decided, are you going to be upstairs? Are you going to be on the field? Are you guys still in the process of figuring that out?
So far, no kinks. We've had a lot of opportunities in practice and scrimmages to use it. And it's been working really well for us so far. As of right now, I'll probably be up. But that's up to the change.
Freeze mentioned just a few days ago some shuffling along the offensive line, trying to find the right combination. What have you seen from that group and some of the changes y'all have made over the last few days?
Really, the group has been solid in the run game. They've done good protection-wise as well, but we got to do a great job as myself as a play caller, keeping them out of bad situations. But move some guys around. We move Percy from tackle back inside the guard, give him a little reps there, move D-Wade back out of left tackle. Just still trying to figure out what the best combination is there. But all in all, I think the guys have been solid, doing a great job in our play action protection, and like I said earlier, doing a great job in the run game.
Derek, this has been your first year as offensive coordinator, but you obviously have been coaching in this league for a long time. How do you deal with the difference week to week with the other coaches, other coordinators in this league and what they do?
Just understanding that, man, they're all extremely smart, experienced, and know that they'll have a wrinkle or two that's brand new for you that you got to make adjustment during the game. I think my time being in this league, the best coordinators or head coach in this league, they always do a great job of in-game adjustments, you know. Whatever they've been seeing on tape and getting prepared for, it's always good, but what are the adjustments that are made and how fast you can do it?
Yeah, Derek, as far as you've had some scrimmages now, you're back with Coach Freeze. What's it been like kind of harmonizing with him, calling plays again, kind of getting the band back together?
It has been great. For me, it's, like you said, it's been refreshing to get back with him, just how we do things between practice, outside of practice. How we interact with our kids, all that has been good so far. And being in this role, it's been exciting to me, been a great learning experience every single day. So it's been something that every day I'm coming in and learn something new.
Coach, you have a lot of different options at tight end. Just take us through, you know, who you feel like could be key contributors there.
Yeah, Valdo, I think, has done a great job so far of, being a receiver at that spot, and as well as improving his blocking skills. Luke, being physical in the run game and being enough as a receiver. All those guys. B. Frage, they've all been consistent so far. So I'm very pleased with that. It's another weapon that's been added, being at that spot at tight end. We can be in 12 personnel. We can be in 11. We can be in 11 personnel and get 12 pitchers and vice versa. So it's been very positive so far.
There's been a lot of talk about the freshman wide receivers, but the veterans you guys got through the transfer portal, just how much have you seen them kind of help out the Horn, especially those freshmen as they learn?
Man, Dre and Robert. I start talking about Robert first. Man, it's you can see a difference. The guy's work ethic, their attention to detail, being able to play inside receiver, outside receiver, learning schemes, and just being a positive influence on all the young guys has been really good. And I say the same thing about Dre, just very experienced, polished, and don't have to say a lot, but these guys' just work ethic is really good, and it's been trickling down to the guys that are younger. For guys like Cam, who's, obviously he's talented, but just seeing what these guys do day to day, whether they're going catching jugs or coming in later to watch film or to study plays, that part has been great, having veteran guys to come in and transfer.
How many of the receivers do you feel like you can actually play? I mean, we've heard just about everybody's name mentioned.
Well, a lot of those guys, the good thing about bringing new guys in and new blood, you get great competition. You know, if you had Coach Davis up here, he'd probably say he felt great about six or seven of them at any time he can put in and kind of roll those guys and keep them fresh and that they're all going to play at a high level.
Derek, what's the biggest difference going to be between the offense this season and last season?
I think, you know, what I've tried to stress is just the attention to detail, learning how to strain and how to finish, you know, being physical, being able to run the football when everybody knows you have to run it, being efficient in the passing game, and I think just taking care of the football. I think the speed of play that we go, I think us using some of our RPO system will be different than what you've seen before.
That is Auburn offensive coordinator Derek Nix, as we spoke to all coordinators. Tanner Burns, maybe, you know, if Dan has time tomorrow, he can run some of that. We did get a little info that right now it appears that kickoff returns, Jarquez Hunter is going to be a part of the kickoff returns, but Tanner said that if they were playing today, the kickoff returners would be Jeremiah Cobb and Malcolm Simmons. So that'll be interesting. Really looking forward to the start of the season, man, and glad it's just 10 days away. Our thanks to Jason Caldwell with us here in hour number one. Callers, congratulations. We had a winner on the pair of tickets to see Everclear and Sister Hazel. I believe Donnie's going to give some more away tomorrow morning on Wings, so be listening for that as well. And Dan and Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer should have it tomorrow. Hopefully I'm back on Friday. Don Dunn will join as well. But that's going to wrap it up for the Wednesday drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.
Yellowwood knows that a five-star backyard is the place